And a good Monday morning to you. Welcome into the Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X. Don't forget that you can take the podcast with you, or the show with you, I should say, 24/7 via podcast. Just search for the Nick Craig Show in your favorite podcast app. You can also listen online by visiting the website nickcraig.com. We want to thank the law group here in Wilmington for their continued support of the program. More on them coming up a little bit later on this morning. As we start off with some major breaking news this morning, around 3 a.m., we learned details about the trade deal. Discussions taking place all weekend in Geneva between Treasury Secretary Scott Bassett and Chinese trade officials. We learned around 3 o'clock this morning that there is a 90-day pause or a slash in those tariffs as the trade deals do continue to be discussed. According to the latest details that we are tracking this morning, the U.S. and China have agreed to temporarily suspend most tariffs on each other's goods in a move that shows some thawing of major trade tensions between the world's two largest economies. The trade agreement means that the reciprocal tariffs, of course, that we have talked a lot about in the last couple of months between the countries, will be cut from 125% to 10%. However, the United States will keep its 20% tariff on Chinese imports as it relates to fentanyl. That will stay in place, meaning that the total tariffs on China will be 30%. However, that is a significant decrease from where it was at, what, 145, something like that, a major decrease in that for 90 days. Again, this comes as the U.S. and China held high-stakes meetings in Switzerland over the weekend, and there was some rumbling, some rumors that this was likely to happen. The Trade Secretary and Scott Bassett announced yesterday that there was likely to be a major announcement coming. That announcement did roll around 3 o'clock Eastern time this morning, that in fact this pause for 90 days, well, not even a pause, but this reduction for 90 days is officially happening. The Treasury Secretary speaking yesterday afternoon with some of these announcements. This is what Scott Bassett had to say yesterday. This is, again, before the announcement was made, but this is what he had to say yesterday afternoon.
And I think that led to a great deal of the productivity we've seen. We will be giving details tomorrow, but I can tell you that the talks were productive. We had the Vice Premier, two vice ministers who were integrally involved, Ambassador Jameson and myself, and I spoke to President Trump, as did Ambassador Jameson last night, and he is fully informed of what is going on. So there will be a complete briefing tomorrow morning.
And we are with that briefing. I don't know if it happened or has not happened yet. I haven't seen any video pop up on the internet yet as it relates to a briefing or press conference. It is just after noon now in Geneva. Actually, it looks like some videos are now finally starting to pop in over the last couple of minutes from the Treasury Secretary as it relates to the trade deal. I'm not sure that necessarily a huge public press conference has taken place yet, but as it seems right now, things moving in the right direction. It looks like here's a video just popping up a few minutes ago from the meeting in Geneva. We'll listen to this together for the first time, talking about these tariff agreements being made. Here's the Treasury Secretary once again.
We have reached an agreement on a 90-day pause, and substantially moved down the tariff levels. Both sides on the reciprocal tariffs will move their tariffs down 115%. We had very robust discussions. Both sides showed great respect. It was a chance for me to meet the Chinese delegation. The Vice Premier, I had previously had only a video call with. Ambassador Jameson was familiar with two of the other leaders on the delegation from his previous time. So there was very good personal interaction. Both countries represented their national interests very well. We concluded that we have shared interest, and we both have an interest in balanced trade. The U.S. will continue moving towards that.
And that's exactly, you know, what the goal of this whole thing was. And now it's important to take a step back to where things started off in early April, right? Because that's when this all started getting kicked up. Now, as I've mentioned before, anybody that found themselves shocked or dismayed or found it unbelievable that Donald Trump put these tariffs on pretty much every other country in the world, the largest being China, well, I guess was just asleep at the wheel. You could not have listened to or followed the Donald Trump campaign that took place last year throughout all of 2024 and then found yourself shocked that this is where we ended up. The president spoke very harshly about our Chinese counterparts as it relates to trade. He spoke very harshly about nations all across the globe taking advantage of the United States. They take their products, mass import them into the United States, and don't take product from the U.S. Now, there's still a very real and valid discussion to have about trade. Right? And you've seen the arguments be made. I'm not going to rehash them here this morning. You've heard the arguments on both sides, right? The simplest argument is, well, you have a trade deficit with your local grocery store, right? Because you go in there and you buy a bunch of product, they don't buy anything from you. That's one of the arguments that's being made. And that's an accurate statement, sure. And there's still a broader discussion over international free trade that is existing. But looking at the situation at hand this morning, as you look at something that started April 2nd, when these tariffs really got kicked off, China announced immediately that they were going to respond to this and slam back on the United States with reciprocal tariffs. The goal and the objective of all of this, as I understand it, from the president, from the Treasury Secretary, from the individuals surrounding President Donald Trump, was to bring other countries like China to the table to have this discussion, to figure out, is there a middle ground? Now, and by the way, I'll also note this. It is important to note that just because you start the processes of negotiation does not mean that you end up with a deal, right? You see people go under negotiation all the time. I mean, how many times in the housing market, oh, a house is under contract. And they start negotiating, looking at things. Oh, contract fell through. Both sides couldn't come to an agreement on whatever the issue is. The house goes back up on the market, right? So just because there's this 90-day pause doesn't necessarily mean that an agreement is met. Now, from this, it seems likely that an agreement would be met. It seems likely that China is serious about coming to the table. China is serious about making sure that they can continue to import products into the United States because it's a 5-to-1 ratio. For every 5 items that China imports into the United States, 1 item gets imported into China. A vast majority of the Chinese economy is propped up on cheap goods being imported into the United States. Now, you and I, the American consumer, we get to take advantage of that, right? No question about it. We get the advantage of going on Amazon, going to the big box stores, whether it be a Walmart, a Target, a Costco, and purchasing cheap goods. You flip the good over, you look at the bottom, what does it say? Made in China. It's been very good for the middle class consumer who is able to purchase cheap, affordable goods, right? There's no argument there at all. It's been huge for middle and lower middle class Americans to be able to buy these goods at a very cheap price. Now, there are serious issues with Chinese business practices, however, and the largest is intellectual property. You have companies, and I'll throw those in air quotes, companies, most of them operated by the Chinese Communist Party or large ownership by the Chinese Communist Party, that take American brands, American intellectual property, rip it off, mass produce it in China, and then flood maybe not even the U.S. economy, but world economies with that cheap good. That's a big problem. There are hundreds, if not thousands, of American-made products in which companies have spent tens, hundreds of millions, billions of dollars on R&D, on marketing, on everything associated with a new product that the Chinese companies just flat out rip off. They steal the product, they mass produce it, not of course to the same standards, and then import it all across the world. That is a huge detriment to U.S. companies. Now, even if those products don't make the U.S. economy, when you flood other markets with knockoff, for all intents and purposes, knockoff goods, then that also hurts the United States of America. And I would argue, and I haven't heard a lot of this, I've seen it mentioned, but I would argue the biggest issue as it relates to the United States and China is just the ridiculous amount of intellectual property theft. I mean, you want to talk about something that is really killing American companies. It's that. The fact that they invest all of the resources, they invest all of the time, go through all of the various research and studies, everything that is required to bringing a new product to market, only to have China start making that product 6 months after it reaches market at a fraction of the cost. Because the material is subpar. Of course, the Chinese working conditions are abysmal. But it's not even a fair thing at all. And so with this announcement that there's going to be this 90-day pause, bringing tariffs back down to 30%, which is essentially where they were to start with, shows that China, and I've made this point before, China needs the U.S. market. They know they need the U.S. market. Now, we also need the Chinese market. There's no question about that. However, I believe that China's economy is much more propped up in that 5-to-1 trade-to-export ratio in China, or import-to-export ratio, I should say, is why they need the U.S. market. There is nowhere for China to sell those goods if they can't get them into the United States. There is no other large market that China can make up the loss in trade as it relates to the United States. They just can't. There's not enough money. There's not enough people. There's not enough economy elsewhere in the world to make up that 5-to-1 ratio. And so they need the United States market. They need the ability to ship their goods to the United States and sell them very cheaply. That is a large part of the Chinese economy. Now, the U.S. also needs those goods as well, because it makes the lower and middle class Americans, it gives them the ability to purchase many more goods at fractions of the price as to products that some are made in America. There are made in America equivalents, but a lot there's just not. Nobody's making these things. They're having to be imported from China. So there's a give and take here. Now, the goal, the objective of all of this has never been to have permanent 145% tariffs on China. That's never been the goal. That's never been the objective. Now, if you listen to some folks on the left, they'll make it out as if, oh, you know, Trump is caving. I'm sure the comments have already started this morning. Trump caving on the Chinese tariffs. There's no caving at all. The idea was put the tariffs on China and force them to come to the negotiating table. What has China done? They have come to the negotiating table and made an agreement with the Treasury Secretary, Scott Bassett, who was in Geneva, Switzerland all weekend negotiating, to pause everything for 90 days while those negotiations continue. This is a good step. This is a positive step for an issue. And again, you can argue whether the issue is right or wrong, but the administration has a perceived issue as it relates to trade. That perceived issue, a lot of it highlights and spotlights China. So therefore, this is a good thing. There's a perceived issue. We are negotiating the perceived issue. Hopefully, over the next 3 months, we get to some sort of better trade deal for the United States, at least from the eyes and the view of the administration. And with that news this morning, stock market futures are looking phenomenal. Dow futures up more than 1,000 points this morning. S&P futures up 184. That's 3.25 percentage points. NASDAQ futures up 4.25 percentage points this morning. So the stock market very much in the green this morning with this news, again, breaking around 3 o'clock a.m. Eastern this morning. So Everything seems to be good here. Now, what do these negotiations look like? What is a fair, and I put that in quotes as well, what is a fair deal for the United States? I don't know. I'm not exactly sure what Trump, what Bassett, what the rest of the administration sees as a fair trade deal. I assume some of it's going to have to do with intellectual property. I think that's a big issue. And some of it might have to do with China taking more U.S. goods. A lot of that is agricultural related. A lot of grain, a lot of food products, a lot of tobacco products that are imported into China. So maybe that's where the negotiations and some of the agreements are made. It's unclear exactly what that looks like this morning. I'm sure we'll hear more today. President Donald Trump is set to be in the Oval Office at 9 o'clock this morning for another major announcement. I can only imagine after that is said and done that the president will, in fact, probably take some questions, as he does almost every single time he's in front of a camera, and we'll likely talk about trade. So we might learn some more details. Not that those will be concrete or set in stone, but likely learning some more details from the president a little bit later on this morning in less than 2 hours for those joining me live here this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X. 7 o'clock weekday mornings is when the Nick Craig Show is live, because President Trump is set to announce an executive order coming up here in just a couple of hours to slash the cost of pharmaceuticals. He says, quote, almost immediately by 30 to 80%. This is coming from a Truth Social post made yesterday from President Donald Trump, being named the Fairness to America as it relates to drug prices. He put in his post, quote, I am pleased to announce that tomorrow morning, that's today, in the White House at 9 a.m., I will sign one of the most consequential executive orders in the country's history. I will be instituting a most favored nations policy, whereby the United States will pay the same price as other nations that pay the lowest price anywhere in the world. Our country will finally be treated fairly, and our citizens' health care costs will be reduced by numbers never even thought of before. Additionally, on top of everything else, the United States will save trillions of dollars. The plan to link the cost of drugs in the United States to the cost of drugs in foreign countries comes after the president's announcement last month that he plans to enact major tariffs on pharmaceutical companies. Trump told the National Republican Congressional Committee back last month that we're going to tariff our pharmaceuticals. And once we do that, they're going to come rushing back into our country because we're the big market. In the United States, drugs are significantly more costly than elsewhere in the world. On average, prices in the United States are more than 2.78 times higher than those seen in 33 other nations, according to the 2024 RAND Corporation report. For brand-name drugs, the price differences is even starker. The gap between prices in the United States and other countries is even larger for those brand name drugs, where U.S. consumers are paying an average four times compared to other nations. Some of the contributing factors to high drug costs in the United States have to do with lack of transparency in drug pricing and a prevalence in foreign countries have and centralized government negotiators haggling over the cost of pharmaceuticals. So this is set to be a major announcement from the president 9 o'clock this morning in the Oval Office. And, you know, as it relates to pharmaceuticals, one of the other big discussions has been banning pharmaceutical advertising on television. Now, that has a multifaceted approach to it. Not only is it a huge amount of money that the pharmaceutical companies spend, but it is a major source of revenue for radio and television stations. If you look at the makeup of who spends the most on TV advertising, and just specifically TV, pharmaceuticals are by far the largest. And I mean, it makes sense, right? You turn on the TV and almost every other ad is some drug for something, whether it's weight loss, ED, some rare form of this, some rare form of that. There's a commercial for it. These are long 60-second commercials, very well-produced TV spots that talk about how you can get back to your life, living your life freely if you take X drug. pharmaceutical advertising is a major, major business in the United States. It is the single largest revenue stream for television. It's also a very high stream for radio, especially those that listen to conservative talk radio. You can't get away from pharmaceutical advertising almost in every single ad break. There's an ad for something, some pill, some shot, some cream, something that is going to help your life meaningfully in one way or the other. Now, there's been a lot of discussion in this administration about banning pharmaceutical advertising because the United States is one of just a handful of countries that allow pharmaceutical advertising the way that you see it here in the U.S. Right? As we see normal here, the rest of the world sees as very taboo. It is not normal practice throughout the rest of the developed world to have these kinds of commercials on television and on radio. The United States is very much in the minority as it relates to pharmaceutical advertising. So he is tackling the prices. I don't know exactly what the details are. We'll know here coming up at 9 o'clock Eastern. Don't know exactly what the details are, but presumably he is going to find a way to bully these pharmaceutical companies into offering lower prices here in the United States. And if he is able to do this successfully, he says it's one of the most consequential executive orders. This could be one of the greatest accomplishments of Trump's presidency. You know, healthcare is always a hot potato political issue. When you look at what is one of the biggest budget busters in people's monthly budget or yearly budget, it's medical. Exorbitantly high doctor visits, outside of those visits, drugs that you get put on depending on what your issue is, they're ridiculously expensive. It is a major drain as we continue discussing the middle and lower middle class economy here in the United States. Drugs and doctor visits and healthcare as a whole is a major cost. Now, most of that, in a lot of cases, especially as you get to the lower side of the socioeconomic class, most of that is being paid for by the federal government through various programs, Medicare, Medicaid, depending on your age and your income level, depending on what program you may be qualified for. It's a major issue for the U.S. economy. It's a major issue for the federal government, who is paying these bills, who is having to go through and pay these ridiculously sky-high drug prices. I don't know why. I do know why. But I'll say this. I don't know why it's like this in the United States, but the answer is very simple. It's because of the insurance industry. The insurance industry and the lobbying behind the insurance industry is why we have the situation we do here. I went through this earlier in the year, going through the open marketplace for health insurance. My eyes almost popped out of my head when I saw these prices. For a single, regular middle-class American, some of the cheapest health plans I could find were $500 or $600 a month. And with those plans, they still had $12,000 or $15,000 a year deductibles. I mean, it was insane. Why is that happening? Because of the insurance industry. Because they have such a grip on Washington, D.C. And by the way, in states as well, North Carolina has some of the highest healthcare costs anywhere in the country. There was a study out, I think it was a Forbes study from last year that looked at 2023 and found that North Carolina had the highest healthcare costs for any state in the country on average. Why is that the case? Well, because these insurance lobbies, these conglomerated healthcare groups, are in cahoots with the insurance industry. And it's just a revolving door of money. Everybody's getting rich, right? The healthcare providers charge an exorbitant amount of money to you for drugs and for service. The insurance industry pays that out and then jacks up your premium. Everybody is getting rich except for you. You're getting screwed in the process. But everybody else is getting rich. The healthcare companies, which are all nonprofits, of course, they're getting rich on all of this. The healthcare industries can jack up the premiums to offset the cost. Everybody's loaded, except for you and me. Anybody that has to use these services is getting taken to the cleaners. But they're getting rich. You're getting screwed. So I'm very curious to see how Trump is actually going to do this through executive order. I'm not sure exactly how he can do this through EO. I'm not, again, the details are sparse. That's why there's an announcement coming up later this morning. But I'm very curious how he's going to do this. And if he is successful in doing so, you are talking about potentially one of the most momentous things that he could do in his entire presidency. You look at something that actually affects most people, and it's drug prices. It's the cost of healthcare. Some comments coming in on our Rumble chat this morning saying, I know two people right now getting crushed by medical debt. It's the saddest thing ever. It's a disaster. You know, I listen to Dave Ramsey and the Dave Ramsey Show. And it's so sad how many people call in and talk about their situation. And they've got $250,000 in medical debt, making combined, $60,000 a year. You're never going to dig out of that hole. You're not making enough money to even begin to touch that. It's so sad, and it's not necessary. It doesn't have to be that way. You look at, and obviously I am not indicating that we need socialized medicine. That is obviously not the solution here. You can go look up at Canada and see the disaster up there, where people are waiting 6, 9, 12 months to get into a doctor when they've got a very serious medical condition because, well, it's socialized medicine, right? Get in line and grab a number. I don't think the solution is socialized medicine. I don't think the solution is, you get rid of private insurance and you let the government administer it. I don't think that's the solution either. There is a way in the free market to lower costs, whether it be drugs or the healthcare service themselves, lower those costs and provide some relief to people that need to use the service, right? It's always interesting. Nobody wants to use medical service, right? Nobody wants to just go to the doctor. When you are doing that, whether it's, maybe outside of your yearly physical, when you're having to go to a doctor, it's not a good thing. You're not going to the doctor to get a pill because everything is going so great. You're not going to the doctor to get an antibiotic because everything is A-okay. You're going it because you're sick. You're dealing with some issue. It's not a good time. That's why you're seeking advice from a medical professional. It's never a good thing that you're going to the doctor. Maybe you're outside of having birth, welcoming a child into the world. But that's like the one exception. Everything else is bad. Everything else is not a good situation that you're in. So nobody wants to have to go to the doctor and pay these exorbitant prices, but you don't have a choice. And so then you look at medical debt, and it's a disaster. Some other comments coming in this morning. Big cost issues as it relates to pharmaceuticals is the PBM middleman. PBM stands for Pharmacy Benefit Managers. It is the main reason many small business pharmacies no longer exist. That's such a big industry, of course. I mean, you're talking about a multi-trillion dollar industry in healthcare, whether you're looking at the pharmaceutical side or the healthcare side of it. It's a multi-trillion dollar industry. There is plenty of money to be made. And that's the way that it's been set up. That's what's been allowed. So that's going to be happening 9 o'clock this morning. We'll keep an eye on it. And if it's as consequential, which I hope it is, as the president announces, we'll have the details coming up for you tomorrow morning. I want to thank the law group here in Wilmington for their continued support of the Nick Craig Show. When legal challenges arise, make sure you trust the law group here in Wilmington. Since 2003, more than 20 years, their experienced attorneys have provided high-quality, affordable legal services across Eastern North Carolina. Whether you're facing a divorce, navigating real estate transactions, or maybe you're in a situation where you need a strong defense, the law group has your back. Their dedicated team ensures your questions are answered and issues are resolved promptly. They're located in downtown Wilmington and just a phone call away at 910-251-6088, or you can visit them online at lawgroupnc.com. That's 910-251-6088, or again, their website, lawgroupnc.com. The Law Group, experience and dedication you can rely on. I used the Law Group back at this point almost 5 years ago for a real estate transaction, a phenomenally smooth and affordable service from the Law Group. Again, visit them online at lawgroupnc.com, and we thank them for their continued support of the Nick Craig Show. An insurrection taking place at an ICE detention center last week. We'll have the details coming up for you in just a few minutes as the Nick Craig Show continues streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X, and 24/7 wherever you get your podcasts. And a good Monday morning to you. Welcome back to the Nick Craig Show. Hopefully you enjoyed your Mother's Day weekend. We've got some news this morning about an insurrection. And yes, that is an accurate word to use. That took place Friday at an ICE detention center. The Newark mayor in Ross Baraka was arrested at a federal immigration detention center where he had been protesting its opening this past week, according to federal prosecutors. Alina Haba, interim U.S. attorney for New Jersey, posted on the social media platform X that Baraka had committed trespass and ignored warnings from Homeland Security personnel to leave the Delaney Hall, which is the detention facility that is run by private prison operator Geo Group. Habab said that Baraka had chosen to disregard the law and added because of that, he was in fact taken into custody. This happened around 8 o'clock on Friday, or this happened midday on Friday. He was released around 8 p.m. The Newark mayor, a Democrat who is running to succeed term-limited Governor Phil Murphy in New Jersey, has embraced the fight with the Trump administration over illegal immigration. He has aggressively pushed back against the construction and opening of a 1,000-bed detention center outside of Newark, arguing that it should not be allowed to open because of building permit issues. Witnesses said the arrest came after Baraka attempted to join a scheduled tour of the facility with three members of New Jersey's congressional delegation. Democrat Robert Menendez, LaMonica McIver, and Bonnie Coleman. When federal officials blocked his entry, a heated argument broke out, according to an activist with the New Jersey Alliance for Immigrant Justice. It continued even after Baraka returned to the public side of the gate. The eyewitness on the scene said, quote, there was yelling and pushing. Then the officers swarmed Baraka and put him in handcuffs and threw him in the back of an unmarked car. In a statement, the Department of Homeland Security said that the lawmaker had not asked for a tour of the facility, contrary to witness accounts. The department said further that a bus carrying detainees was entering the facility and a group of protesters, including two members of the U.S. House of Representatives, stormed the gates and broke into the detention facility. It said that Menendez and Watson Coleman and a number of protesters were currently holed up in a guard shack at the facility. Wow. Doesn't it sound like an insurrection taking place here? You've got a members of Congress. You've got a mayor storming into a federal detention facility. Now, they weren't invited to be there. They were not guests on an itinerary. And they, as a bus was pulling through to presumably let individuals into the facility or bring individuals into the facility, they decided to run through the gates. That is what I would describe as an insurrection, as I understand it, right? We've been told now since January the 6th, 2021, that anybody that trespasses is committing insurrection. And as a result of that, based on what Democrats have done in the past, the Newark mayor and potentially a couple of members of Congress should be thrown in prison for an unlimited amount of time. They should not be given due process. They should rot in prison for years. And for their charge of trespassing, they should be given multiple years in prison because that's what happened with people on January the 6th, 2021. See, this is the issue that the Democrats created themselves. Now, individuals that trespassed on the U.S. Capitol on January the 6th should, in fact, have been charged with trespassing. Trespassing, in the grand scheme of things, is a relatively minor offense. It's not a zero offense. It's a minor offense. And with that minor offense, people should be held responsible for that. If there's fines or minor jail time associated with trespassing, then that's what you have to serve. We live in a country of laws. And if individuals break the laws, whether it's trespassing on the Capitol January 6, 2021, or trespassing at an ICE detention facility last Friday, then it's trespassing. And those things should be held and those things should be responded to equally. Right? See, Democrats constantly change the rules of the game. And this is their biggest issue politically. They always take it just a couple of steps too far. They could have handled January the 6th in a much different manner. They could have continued to condemn the president of the United States. They could have condemned his supporters. What they shouldn't have done was made these people political prisoners. Some people were in jail for 3 years waiting, just waiting. They weren't officially charged and sent, or they were charged, but they weren't officially sentenced with anything. They sat in a prison and rotted for 3 years while the slow wheels of justice churned. This is the situation that Democrats have created. And, you know, I know there's a lot of discussion of, oh, we need to take the higher road. And to that, I say to hell with it. If Democrats want to change the rules of the game, then it's time to play the game by their rules. You don't get to change the rules mid-game and then get pissed off when the other team starts playing by your same rules. This is the issue that the Democrats deal with. They are constantly moving the goalposts as it relates to politics. And then when they are charged and found guilty of the same thing, they want to cry foul. They don't want them to have to be held responsible. Here's the Newark mayor on CNN Friday night as he was bravely released after a couple hours of holding.
Well, I mean, I obviously was charged with federal trespassing and, you know, which is a Class C misdemeanor. But, you know, going through this is just really humiliating and painful. But the reality is, this is what democracy is, right? And so, you know, we are in dispute here, and we're just living in a time period now where if you are opposed to the ideas of people, you could be threatened with arrest or intimidation, and that's exactly what's happening. And that's not the America that we want to be in. That's not the America that people chose to move thousands of miles from around the world to. This is not this place, and they're turning it into an authoritarianist government.
Do you have any regrets about how today happened?
No, I don't have any regrets at all. I went down there to support my Congress people, my Congresswoman from my district, Congresswoman Blondie Watson Coleman as well, who is like a mother to us here, and Congressman Menendez, who's also from our district. I went down there to support them in a press conference, and I would do it again. I have a right to go to those facilities as the mayor of the city. Fire inspector has a right to be on those facilities. And it is not federal property. It's in fact private property. GEO is privately owned. It's a private prison that these people are getting $63 million to do this work, and they have to abide by local laws. That's just a fact. I don't care what our political differences is. They still have to abide by the law.
So this is very interesting. Right at the top there, he says, I was charged with federal trespassing. What did he say? Class C misdemeanor. Well, that's exactly what the January 6th people were charged with too, right? It's a federal trespassing. They trespassed on the U.S. Capitol. So this creates a real dichotomy here for the left, because at the same time, they want individuals to pay the price for federally trespassing as long as it meets their political agenda narrative, right? As long as it's those damn Republicans, then we want to throw the book at them. We want to make them rot in prison for years on end with no due process. Yet when their people federally trespass, that's what he was charged with. And we live in a society of innocent until proven guilty. And the Newark mayor should have his day in court. But now Democrats are screaming about how this shouldn't be prosecuted. That this shouldn't happen at all. Here's everybody's favorite congresswoman, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, talking about this in a video that I believe was posted late Friday night about this. So what is she saying, right?
And now what DHS is trying to say, again, they're using public intimidation because they know that they cannot come for us all. They know that they cannot come for us all. And recently what they said is that DHS is allegedly looking into arresting members of Congress who were showing up for their legal and constitutional obligation to conduct oversight. If anyone's breaking the law in this situation, it's not members of Congress, it's the Department of Homeland Security. It's people like Tom Homan and Secretary Kristi Noem. You lay a finger on someone, on Representative Bonnie Watson Coleman, on Representative, or any of the representatives that were there, you lay a finger on them, we are going to have a problem.
Now, why? Well, hold on a second here. Why would we have a problem? If they trespassed, federally trespassed, why do we have a problem? I thought that we lived in a society of rules. I thought we lived in a society of laws. And if these individuals were in fact trespassing on federal property, then why should they not be charged with such? I mean, this is the problem with the left. They just made a mockery of this situation for the last 4 years. And now that their people are being charged with the same thing, we've got to listen to the former Starbucks barista tell us that if you lay a hand on them, what do you mean? If they broke the law, they broke the law. If they trespass, they trespass. Why should they not be held responsible the same way as everybody else who federally trespassed, AOC? You were all in favor of that. You loved the fact that people were rotting in prison for years on end as it related to federally trespassing January 6, 2021. Why is this any different? Ah, because those were Republicans that did that. And these people are Democrats that did this. Just because you're a member of Congress doesn't mean that you're allowed to trespass on property. Just because you're a member of Congress doesn't mean that the rule of law doesn't matter to you and doesn't obtain to you. It absolutely does. Just your elected member of Congress doesn't give you a get out of jail free card. It doesn't give you a break any laws you want card. You still have to abide by the same laws that everybody else does, right, AOC?
Because the people who are breaking the law are the people who are not abiding by it. And it is enshrined in the law that members of Congress who show up to ICE and CBP facilities are required to be granted access, legally required to be granted access. And they legally cannot be inhibited from accessing these facilities to conduct their constitutional obligation to investigate and conduct oversight. So if Kristi Noem wants to break the law, that's on her. But it sure as hell is not someone like Representative Robert Menendez that needs to be arrested. Okay?
Okay, great. Yeah, that's great. Lost a couple of brain cells there, I think, listening to AOC. Now, her point is members of Congress have the constitutional ability to show up and investigate ICE facilities. I think that's absolutely fair. I applaud the ability for members of Congress to show up and investigate properties. I don't believe that at any point in time, members of Congress can just walk into a facility without a scheduled appointment, without any sort of call ahead or any notice, and just say, "Hi, I'm here to investigate your facility," and they're granted access. I think that there's a reasonable expectation that if you want to do that, that you do so. And you're absolutely allowed to. The issue here is not that members of Congress showed up at an ICE detention facility. I don't have a problem with that at all. It's that they just attempted to, and in some cases, succeeded going through a gate when they were told, "You're not allowed to enter right now. You're not allowed to enter at this time." They decided to do so anyway, because they don't believe that the rule of law matters to them. They don't believe that they should be held under the same sorts of laws that you and I are. They should be allowed to show up whenever they want, wherever they want, and they should not have to deal with the law. They should not have to deal with the consequences. Here's the statement from Congressman Rob Menendez. What occurred at Delaney Hall today, this was on Friday, should shake every American to their core. As a member of Congress, we have the legal right to conduct oversight at any DHS facility without prior notice, as we have already done twice this year. Throughout every step of this visit, ICE attempted to intimidate everyone involved and impede our ability to conduct oversight. This is like nothing I've ever seen before, and I am shocked and disturbed that something like this happened in our community. Despite the lies and misinformation being spread by the Trump administration, this will not stop our fight. We will continue to stand up for all of our neighbors and fight against the administration's attempts to undermine the rights of everyone who calls this country home. So I'm supposed to feel sorry for Congressman Menendez? I'm supposed to be upset that he was... He himself actually was arrested. It was the New York mayor, that was. But I'm supposed to feel sorry that he showed up to an ICE facility unannounced and was told at the time that he can't get in there? I'm supposed to feel upset about that? Democrats made the point for years that Trump and everybody connected to Donald Trump, every Republican across the country, needs to be arrested, targeted, and in some cases sentenced to life in prison for anything that they do. But now they don't want to be held to that same standard. They want to be able to trespass at a federal facility. In the case of the Newark mayor, he's not a congressman. He doesn't have the authority to show up to a facility unannounced and breach through the gates to get in there. Now, we can have a different discussion about the members of Congress. That's not here nor there. Neither of them have been charged or arrested. The Newark mayor has been, and he should have been. And I hope Alina Haba, the acting U.S. attorney for New Jersey, throws the book at him. This is the game that you guys created. It's complete and total hypocrisy. You don't get to change the rules of the game and then not play by it. It's as simple as that. I don't know of any other way to describe it. That's the only way that I know to describe what Democrats do with the law. They are consistently changing the rules to facilitate whatever kind of wacko ideology or agenda is on today's menu. Right, because it's constantly changing. It's just one bouncing ball to another for the Democrats. They really struggle with anything as it relates to succinct messaging. And so when they show up at an ICE facility and breach the gates, and a bunch of protesters are there and told, "You guys are trespassing," as a bus is going through the facility, what do you think is going to happen? Why do you guys believe that you have the moral authority? Where do you believe that you have the moral high ground to demand this? Yeah, there's other comments that show a Democrat congresswoman assaulting an ICE officer, pushing an ICE officer, pushing him into a gate. That's an assault on law enforcement. Assaulting a federal officer, 18 U.S.C., subsection 111. So that's great. If she wants to do that, then she needs to be charged with assaulting a federal official. I mean, the Trump War Room X account posted it. Here's the video. You can see her in the red dress pushing to the side of a federal agent. Why is that allowed? Now you might say, "Oh well, Nick, come on, she's not actually assaulting." No, by the rule of law, by the book, you could see her punching and pushing a federal agent. So is she going to be arrested? Look at her punching. Is she going to be charged? She sure as hell should be. If I was at that protest and I was punching a federal agent, I should also be charged with that. I should also be arrested. I might argue she should be expelled from Congress for it. She should be impeached of her position for this insurrection that took place. No one is above the law. No one's above the law. You guys have made it obviously clear that no one is above the law. You guys have spent four, six, 8 years weaponizing the legal system to go after your political opponents, to go after people that you disagree with politically. Your time has finally come. The issue when you with politics is the pendulum, and it swings. And for many years, it was swinging towards the left. But now it's come back towards the right. And now you guys are going to have to deal with the mess that you made. You have set this standard. You have decided that this is how you want to operate in the political sphere. And now you're going to have to deal with it. I don't have any sympathy. I'm not upset about it. I'm not crying over it. This is what you guys created. This is your own making and your own doing. Comment on our Rumble chat this morning. Lawfare is a slippery slope. You're damn right it's a slippery slope. This is why certain folks on the left over the last 4 or 6 years have spoken up. Not many of them, but a few of them have spoken up against the way the Democrats have operated as it relates to the law. They have spoken up because they knew that this pendulum would swing back in the other direction. They knew that when Republicans got into power, they would be facing the same thing that they just put Republicans through. A couple of Democrats were pretty smart. A couple of Democrats knew that if they continued to operate in a manner of what seemed like complete and total political persecution of people they disagreed with, that it would come back and bite them in the ass. And here we are. May of 2025, it has finally come back, and now it is biting Democrats in the ass. I hope Alina Haba goes after the Newark mayor for federally trespassing. That's what he was charged with. If there's evidence to back that up, I hope he rots in jail. That's the process. That's what you guys want. That's what you guys have created. For the Congresswoman here, Congresswoman LaMonica McIver, assaulting an ICE agent, same thing. She assaulted a federal officer. Throw the book at her. I hate that we're in a situation where it's like eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth kind of stuff, but there's no other way around it. Taking the moral high road is over. There's no other higher road to take. Republicans consistently find themselves in this trap where we go, well, you know, we have to be the party of morals. We need to be the party of taking the high road here and not getting dragged down by the Democrats. And to that, I say to hell with it. These people hate America. They hate you. They hate me. They hate what our Constitution stands for. And I'd say give it to them. I'm over it. I don't care. The taking the high ground, taking the high road has left Republicans nowhere. It's left people rotting in prison. It has allowed Democrats to weaponize things like the DOJ and the FBI to go after former sitting presidents. What are we waiting for? What's left? What more high road do you want to take? Where do you believe it's going to get you? Nowhere. The answer is nowhere. The days of taking the moral high ground and the moral high road needs to be done for the Republican Party. If Democrats want to play dirty, it's time for us to get in the mud and play the exact same game. It's the only way that this madness stops. Because I can promise you this, Republicans take the high road, the next time Democrats are in power, they double down. They throw more of you in jail. You weaponize the DOJ and the FBI to go after more of their political opponents. The only way to make this madness stop is to give them a taste of their own medicine. It's really as simple as that. It's as simple as that. And the unfortunate reality is we don't want to be in some sort of tit for tat judicial situation, but I don't know any other way around it. The Democrats aren't going to stop. They have no morals at all. They have no ability to use the system of justice and government, not for their own political game. So what else do you do? It creates a horrific situation if you're playing tit for tat with judiciary stuff. I agree, it's awful. But what is the alternative? Allow these people to continue to run amok? Allow these people to feel like they can use the government when they're in power to go after their opponents and not have any recourse? To hell with it. I'm done. I'm over it. So an insurrection takes place at an ICE facility. I guess we'll be seeing people sitting in jail for 2 to 3 years while they wait for a trial. That's what happened to hundreds of people as it related to January the 6th. It's time for Democrats to wake up and get a taste of their own medicine. I just don't know any other way around it. Well, that's going to do it for a Monday edition of the Nick Craig Show. A lot that we'll be tracking today. The major pharmaceutical announcement coming up at 9 o'clock this morning, plus some additional details on the 90-day pause in trade tariffs between the United States and China. Thanks again to the Law Group here in Wilmington this morning for their support. Visit them online at lawgroupnc.com. We're back with you tomorrow morning right here on the Nick Craig Show.